Okay, we're beginning here on Lamed Chet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Just before we start the Mishnah, we want to just review the point of the 3 years of a chazakah is to establish a way for a person to be protected from the possibility that if he loses his contract, that he's also going to lose the land. And so the Chachamim instituted the 3 years of chazakah to replace the necessity for a shtar. Or, in other words, it was a way to determine the amount of time that you need to change who is considered to be mukzak in the property, the original owner or the new party. When does the new party become the mukzak in the land? And therefore, amotzi michaveru lavaraya, that is after a period of 3 years. But in establishing that, the chachamim had to provide protections for both sides. In one sense, they're trying to help out the buyer to say that he doesn't have to hold on to his contract forever. But on the other hand, they also need to protect the quote-unquote seller, original owner of the property, by not allowing a chazakah to be established. Elaim Kain, we know, it was done with the knowledge of the seller, and his lack of objection is what establishes the chazakah. But if he is not going to get that information, or his lack of objection is being caused by some other variable, then you can't establish a chazakah. And therefore the chachamim prevented the chazakah from working in certain instances, because the party who is the original owner is not objecting, not because he really believes that you own the property, but because something else is causing that effect. Either he doesn't know the information, or he is afraid to object. And because of that, the Chazal are trying to bring a balance between those two, and therefore the Sugya and the Mishnah here is discussing that balance about the flow of information between the two parties. Mishnah begins, Shlosh Aratzot L'Chazaka. We have three different areas that are classified as separate regions with regards to Chazaka. Over here we have a Mishnah that's dealing with issues of Chazaka. This Mishnah comes up in other areas. We have it by Shemitah, by other instances where it makes a difference where you are located. And that is within Eretz Yisrael, they broke down Eretz Yisrael into three different regions. The difference being partly their topography, which was these were areas that had different topography, but that different topography also led to different, call it city-states or fiefdoms being there, or the inability to travel between these areas. That is, Shlosh Aratzot L'Chazaka, Yehuda, Ve'Ever Yarden, Ve'Agalil. So you have the area of Yehuda, which is around Yerushalayim in the Shvela. You have Ever Yarden on the other side, the eastern side of the Yarden, and the Galil, which is up north. And these were areas where there was Jewish settlement, especially during the time of the Chashmonaim, where their kingdom had expanded into those areas, as well as in the time of the Romans. The Romans were found in all these areas, and the Jews that lived in the Roman Empire were found in all these areas. In addition, after the Churban HaBayit, especially, there is a huge settlement of the Jews up north. A lot of the remnants and archaeology that are found from the times of the Tanaim are found up north. And part of that has to do with the accessibility to Bavel, the travel that happened between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, where you would end up in the north. In addition to the fact that Yehuda was destroyed pretty heavily during the rebellion during the Churban HaBayit, as well as Mered Bar Kokhba. So therefore the Jewish settlements, some of which were left intact because they weren't involved in these rebellions, and some of them because the Romans were less interested up there, had a larger Jewish presence up there. Sanhedrin was in Yavne at one point, ends up moving up to Sharpam and Tveria. They end up moving up north. So there's a shift, there's a huge shift in the settlement from the south up to the north. And we find that stayed that way even into the time of the 1500s. Most of the Jewish settlement was up in Sfat, and that was considered the major city. Yerushalayim was like a desolate city. Even the Ramban comes to visit, he speaks about Yerushalayim, that he could barely find 10 Jews in Yerushalayim. For that reason, you have these different areas that are classified independently for issues with regards to Chazaka, which we're going to see in a minute. Hayah b'Yehuda, if he was in Yehuda, b'chzik b'Galil, and the Chazaka took place in Galil, B'Galil v'yachzik b'Yehuda, he's in the Galil and the Chazaka took place in Yehuda, eina chazaka ad she'eimo b'medina achat. It's not considered to be chazaka unless you're in the same region, the same area. The Rashbam over here gives two reasons for this. He says, first of all, that with regards to these different regions, yesh tigrot b'nehem, that there were altercations or scuttles between them, meaning that there was tension between these regions. In addition to that, lo hayush shayarot mitzuyot, he says on the top of the next amud, which is that there wasn't heavy traffic, or there weren't caravans that were going back and forth. One might be a result of the other. I mean, there might not be heavy traffic of caravans because of the issues between them or the difficult relations that they had. Or there was some sort of danger in traveling from one to the other, meaning that neither of them was necessarily at odds with the other, but there might have been areas where there were settlements or armies that were sitting there that made it difficult to travel between them. And therefore, it was not common for people to move back and forth between these areas or easily move back and forth between these areas. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, lo amru shalosh shanim el kedei sheyeh be'asfamya. The reason that Chazal gave for this 3-year period for Chazaka is in order that a person could be out in Spain. Ve'achzik shana, the person will take possession of the property for a year. And then, yelchol ve'odiu shana, they will bring the news to him. It'll take them a year to transport that news to the individual who's in Spain. Then, ve'avod shana acheret, and then he will travel back in the subsequent year to notify the individual that it's unacceptable that he's in his land. So Rabbi Yehuda seemingly is arguing on the Tanna Kamma. As the Rashbam points out, he's arguing on 2 main points. The first point to which he's arguing on is the reason for the chazaka of Shlosh Shanim. Whereas earlier in the parak we saw Rava give the reason for the chazaka of Shlosh Shanim is because ad kan izdaru anishei b'shtara shalen. The people until that point are careful with their shtar. For 3 years they hold on to the shtar because in case there are questions or issues that arise with regards to the ownership of the field, they'll have evidence to the contrary. After 3 years where nothing's come up, the person isn't as careful and they lose their shtar. Again, there's no repository for shtarot. There's no place to go register the land. So to hold on to a shtar forever was something that seemed unreasonable. So after 3 years, and there were no objections, a person didn't hold on to his shtar, and then replacing the shtar is his chazaka, the fact that he's been here for that period of time. So that's what we saw from Rav. What we see here is Rabbi Yehuda gives a different reason for the 3 years, and that has to do with the distance there is from Eretz Yisrael until Spain. As both the Balei HaTosafot and the Rashbam point out, for them it was basically the end of the world, even though as they both point out, you could go further. Said either they phrase it this way, which is people didn't travel more than a year away from their property, or this was a normal location for people to go. There are people who go to far-flung or places even further than that, but that's not considered to be within the normal bell curve. Because Chazal establish a takana, they deal with everybody who falls within the normal range of the bell curve. They don't deal with people on the tails of the bell curve. So within a year's travel, that's considered to be normal. And again, in their day, you could see this in Josephus and other writings of the time, that when they traveled in the Mediterranean, they didn't go into the middle of the Mediterranean and sail all the way to Spain, which would have taken a lot less time because of the dangers involved in traveling that way. They used to travel from hopping from port to port. That way they stayed close to land. They were able to refill with supplies as they went along. And so it took time for them to travel because they hopped from port to port until they got to Spain. That took them a duration of time. Here, the Gemara speaks about a time period of a year. So that is the reason behind the chazak over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's the duration, amount of time, or period of time that a person would be normally found away from his property. And therefore, we have to give sufficient time for the person to establish a chazak on the property, then the news to travel to this individual, and then this individual to return back and deny this person the right to be in his property. So that's where the 3 years come from. That has implications in the fact that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the 3 years has to do with how far you are away from your field, implying that if you were closer, then you wouldn't need this 3-year period. If you were in town and someone took possession of the property, you would lose rights to that property at a much faster pace because you have the information. The fact you didn't object means that you don't care or that you are not the owner of the property. And the Rashbam over here says, even up to a day. If he does it in front of you, then you would be established a chazaka. Over here, it might seem from the Mishnah that it's a year. Because he says he has to be achim machzik shana. until he holds on to it for a year. So it might be that you need at least a minimum of a year, because that establishes that the person's actually staying there. It's not just like they went in there for a short time. They're stealing. It means that they're living there. So maybe you need that duration of time. But it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda believes less time would establish a chazakah if you were closer to home. The second thing that seemingly comes out of the position of Rabbi Yehuda, which we will see in the Gemara, is the statement of the Mishnah, which is v'yavol l'shana acheret, that the next year he comes back. Seems to indicate that you must come back in person to object to the individual being there. Now, those are votes, and the second Amud asks, well, that doesn't prove anything. Maybe he just has to come back and pass the information on. How do you know it means that he has to actually see him in person? That's what the Gemara is middayek out of Rabbi Yehuda's position, as well as the Chachamim's position to the opposite, which is that here Rabbi Yehuda believes you have to get the information back to the individual face to face. And therefore you need to travel back. We have to give you sufficient time to travel back and object in person to what he is doing. Because otherwise he could object wherever he is, and we'd expect the information to reach him or the news to travel. The fact that he says here that he travels back in the following year, that seems to indicate that he himself must come back and object to the individuals found in his property. And one corollary to the Mishnah, which the Yerushalmi brings up, the Rashbam over here quotes it, is the fact that once Chazal established that Yehuda, Galil, and Eber Yarden are separate regions or separate areas, then you can have quirky things that would happen. For instance, if you have a party who's in Yehuda, and another party is in Eber Yarden on two sides of the Yarden, and they can see each other. Despite the fact that they can see each other, and he knows the other person sitting in his property, he won't establish a chazakah. Because Chazal said, when you're in two different regions, you can't establish a chazakah. So once they establish the fact that these are three different areas or three different regions, that has application no matter whether you know the information or don't know the information. There's no way to establish a chazakah once they put the takana in place. Because they assumed that the default situation was that the news wouldn't travel or you couldn't get from one to the other. And therefore, even if you can, or even if the information seems to be flowing, that would not be sufficient grounds to establish a chazakah. Because of the fact that they established that these are three different regions, and from one region to the other, you may not establish a chazakah. We're going to see in a second that the Gemara focuses on mecha'a in a second, which is the objection. The Rashbam keeps saying this over and over again, which is, if you know that the individual cannot object because he's found somewhere else, then you can't establish a chazakah. The fact that you know, or you're aware of the fact that there is no objection being made here, that lack of objection also blocks your ability to establish a chazakah. So his lack of objection is coming from some exogenous variable, which is that he's not found here, or he can't get the information to you. Given that, you also can't establish a chazakah. Because your chazakah is, why didn't he object? Therefore I have a chazakah. Well, if he can't object because there's something else stopping him from objecting, then your chazakah is also not a chazakah. So the chazakah is reliant on the ability to object, because the chazakah is only a chazakah because it is in the face of the lack of an objection. And so that becomes the Gemara's first question, Maika Savar Tanakama. What is the Tanakama thinking? Ika Savar Mecha'a Shalopvanav Havia Mecha'a. If he believes that when you object, even not in front of the party, establishing a chazakah. And as the Rashbam notes over here, the question is not simply about someone who's far away. It's even about someone who is proximate. Do we demand of them to come face to face with the individual? Or is it sufficient that you raise your objection in front of two edim? As he says here, afilu shelo bifanav kugon shishneim darim bi'ir achat, umicha bifnei shnayim min ashuk. It's a case where they live in the same city, but instead of going face-to-face and objecting, he simply objects to two edim in the market. Then afidilu mi'Yehuda v'Galil nami. Then why can't it be that from Yehuda to Galil, you can also establish an objection or raise an objection? And if you can do that, you also could establish a chazakah, because the lack of objection would be an indication that you can establish a chazakah. Ika zavar mecha shalofanav lo havi mecha'a. If he believes that an objection that is not done in person is not considered to be a chazakah, afil Yehuda b'Yehuda nami. Why does it matter if it's Yehuda b'Galil? Even within Yehuda, two areas in Yehuda, two cities within Yehuda, That should also be a problem because he didn't do it face to face. So what is that position of the Tanakhama? Does he require a face-to-face objection, or does he simply require an objection? If he simply requires an objection, he should not be bothered by the distance or the fact that you're in Yudah Galil, Ever Yordain, none of that should matter. If he believes you need to do it face-to-face, then even within Yehudah, you would have problems if you're not in the same area, if you're not local to the individual. So Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, Amar Rav, Lolam Kasavar, Micha'a Shelo Befanav, Havya Micha'a. That the Tanakhama definitely believes that an objection not face-to-face is classified as an objection. U'mishnatenu b'shat chirum shanim. And our Mishnah is talking about a case of emergency, or in essence a time of warfare, or a time where there's difficulty traveling from one area to the other. Again, the Rishonim point out that it's got to be an issue of sakanat nefashot, which is that it's dangerous to travel between the areas, either because of, we said, tigrot, that there is some sort of tension between the areas, there's marauders, there are people on the way that prevent you from traveling, and there are not caravans that are found that move between these areas. So then why did the Mishnah use Yehuda and Galil in particular, rather than just say, Bishat Chirum? Then it doesn't matter how, where you are, you can't get the information one to the other. Hakamash Malan, the Stam Yehuda v'Galil, Kishat Chirum Gamu. Tells you that the default status of Yehuda and Galil is like it is a Shat Chirum, even Bishat Shalom. Even when there is peace, meaning that there is no active war going on in this area, they have the same status as if these are warring areas, as if these are areas with tensions between them. And again here, whether there literally were tensions between them, or as the Rashbam says over here, she'en shayrot mitzuyot nezulazo, that they don't have active caravans moving back and forth, or that there are dangers on the way between them, there are places that are abandoned, or places with people who are difficult, whatever the reasons are, the area between Yehuda and Galil was not traveled actively or heavily. So now, from this, you would conclude a number of things. First of all, that Stam Yehuda and Galil has a din like Shat Chirum. Shat Chirum is the key element to the Mishnah here, which is the Shat Chirum, where there is no traffic between areas, there a Mecha'a is problematic, because the Mecha'a, or the news of the Mecha'a, won't reach the Machzik, the person who's sitting on the property. Since the objection won't reach him, his being machzik, his establishing ownership on the property through living there, is not relevant or not meaningful because it's not in the face of an objection or the lack of an objection. The reason there's no objection here is because the news won't reach him. The information won't reach him. And the second piece of information is that Stam Yehuda v'Galil has that status of Shat Chirum. So now the Baal Yad Tosafot already raised an issue that's raised by many of the Rishonim. He says, Tema, why is the Gemara's question Micha'a shelo bifanav, or Micha'a bifanav? That the objection, does it need to be face-to-face? Or can it be even not face-to-face? Why doesn't the Gemara ask? Chazaka bifanav? Chazaka shelo bifanav? Why don't they say about a chazaka, does it have to be done face-to-face? Or does a chazaka can be done even not face-to-face? How come the Gemara here is very focused on Micha'a? Again, for the Rashbam, it seems that the focus on the Micha'a is because that is the key element of what establishes the chazaka. A chazaka without the ability to have a mecha'a is meaningless. And therefore, the Rashbam seems to equate the two and just say that the mecha'a is the most important element because that determines whether you can establish a chazaka. On the other hand, the Baal Yad Tosafot give an answer here, which they repeat throughout the sugya, say it on the Amud Bet as well, which is that there's a difference between a chazaka and a mecha'a, which is here, he says, Yesh lomar, lefish tam, Taloi b'mecha'a v'lo b'chazaka, sh'adam ha'machzik b'karkotav sh'chavero, itlei kala. When a person sets up shop on somebody else's property, that is something that gets publicity. That's something that the news travels fast. Ch'uchoker v'sho'el al nechasav. Person who is far away checks up on his properties. He checks up on what's going on. He wants to know. He's looking for news. He is searching for news about that, as well as the neighbors. When someone shows up and sets up shop on the property, they start to talk about it. This is the type of thing that information travels, and it has much more of a public nature to it because of the fact that these rumors spread, or someone is searching or looking into the information. On the other hand, amichah in lakol kolkach. There comes an objection that has much less momentum to its rumor because it's somebody objected, but it's not something that's big news. Nobody's searching for it. The guy who's sitting on the property is not looking to find out if the other guy is objecting. He's living there assuming that there is no objection. Because of that, ein amachzik mechazer im mochelo balakarka, the person's there is not looking to find out if he's objecting. Fikach en chezkato chazaka, kein yachol lishmo machato, demayo yo shemicha. If he can't hear the objection, then what's the point of the objection? That's why you can't establish a chazaka if he can't hear the objection. So here Tosfot says that there's an unevenness between a chazaka and a mecha'ah because of the nature of a chazaka. Because as Tosfot notes, who says Rabbi Yehuda requires you to come back and tell him directly? Maybe he just requires you to get to the local area and then the news would travel to the individual. But that can't be the case because of the unevenness of Rabbi Yehuda's expression. We assume that the information will reach him in Spain when it comes to the chazaka. Whereas when it comes to the mecha'ah, he requires you to travel back. So obviously there is a difference qualitatively between the news of a person establishing a chazaka versus the news of someone objecting to that chazaka. In one case, we assume the news or the information will reach him. On the other hand, we don't assume that the mecha will reach them, and we require you to come in person and make that declaration. The way that the Baal HaTos would say it is that the person who owns the property is searching, looking into the matter, trying to find out what's going on with this property. He's actively engaging to find that out. Person on the property is not actively engaging to find out the information from someone else or to find out about the objection. Others just suggest that when a person sets up shop in another person's property, that's a matter of publicity. I mean, if someone thinks they're stealing, someone thinks that they took the property from someone else, that's the type of thing that is newsworthy and it gets out there. A micha'ah, an objection by someone far away, why would that be newsworthy? That doesn't travel easily. Others suggest that the differences in the nature of what can be brought to what. When it comes to a machzik on the property, he can't go and take his chazaka and demonstrate it and display it before the other individual. Of course, he is static because the property is here. The person who's objecting has the ability to move. He can object over there, he can object over here. He can move around to establish his objection. Whereas the person establishing the chazaka can only do it in one place, and that is the place where the karka is found. Whether or not the individual is there, that's a separate issue, but he can't take the property to him. He can have the party come to him, but he can't take the property there. By a mecha'ah, you could set the mecha'ah in motion somewhere else, or you could come here and set the mecha'ah in motion. For all of those reasons, many Rishonim believe that there is an unevenness between chazaka and mecha'ah, and that's why the Gemara is very focused on mecha'ah, because that's the more difficult of the two in order to get the information and the news to the parties that need it. And for that reason, the Gemara is totally focused on this. Again, the Rashbam, others seem to indicate that they're equal, and that the Gemara focused on mecha'ah, because that is the mechanism that allows the chazaka to be established. So that's the most important point or pivot point in this situation. That's why the Gemara is focused on mecha'ah. The second thing that the Baal HaTosafot raised over here is that Stam Yehuda v'Galil Kashat Chirum Dami, if you remember in the Gemara in Gittin, we had a requirement that the Edim say, Bifanai Nechtav, Ubifanai Nechtam. So over there we had two reasons for that. Either Shalom Bikiyim Bishma, that the outside of Eretz Yisrael they were not Bikiyim in writing the Get Lishma, or because Ein Edim Mitzuyim, that Edim were not commonly found, and we're worried about the fact that Edim are not going to be able to travel to the area or the location to testify as to the veracity of the get. So therefore we have this b'fanai nechtav v'nechtam to validate the get by this other Edim, and that way we wouldn't have to get to the original Edim. The Gemara there says that when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, Edim mitzuyin, that you don't have to worry about it. That's why there's a difference between in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, is because in Eretz Yisrael the Edim are mitzuyin. Whereas outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's too far away. People are not found, it's not easily traveled. But that indicates that within Eretz Yisrael, there was an ability to travel between the different regions and get the news or the information Edim could get between these different locations. So Baal HaTosafot would say over here, what do you mean? The Gemara here just said that Stam Yehuda v'Galil is Kishat Chirum Dami, that the default status of these two regions was that there wasn't heavy traffic. It wasn't easy to travel between them. So how could you argue that Edim could get the information back and forth? So Bayit Tosafot differentiate in the case and say it depends if you actively want to get the information or you're passively assuming the information is going to travel. When it comes to actively searching for the information or getting the information, then you can get the sufficient travel or their caravans that are moving back and forth because you're intent on getting the information from the Edim or finding the Edim. If you work at it, you'll get there and there's sufficient travel for that. What we want to know is that, is there enough travel that by default, if I object in one region, that news will travel back to the individual in the other region? That requires a much higher threshold of traffic or people moving back and forth or free flow of traffic in order for that to happen, because that happens passively, not actively. Nobody's trying to send the information back. You simply object it here where you're sitting, and you expect that information to reach the individual who is living somewhere else in another region. For that to happen, you need much heavier traffic or flow of traffic because nobody's actively seeking to transfer that information. So that's the Gemara's question. Mechasha b'fanav means he's actively seeking to get the information to the party. Shlo b'fanav, we're going to see in a second, means that he just says it wherever he is and we expect the news to get to the other party. We saw that already in the Gemara. The question is, what suffices as a mecha? What type of objection do I need to make in order to maintain my rights to the property? What's the level of objection that is sufficient that will also have impact on his ability to establish a chazakah if I don't make the objection? What is my obligation in terms of establishing the mecha or making the objection over here? Once I've established that, that also will establish the threshold for creating or establishing a chazakah, because the lack of that objection will allow me to make a chazakah. But if I am objecting in front of two edim far away, and we expect the news to travel, that will be sufficient grounds for you to protect your rights and the other person not to establish chazakah. We don't go then and check, did the information travel? It's irrelevant. Once we assume that that is sufficient objection and it will travel, or we assume it will travel, whether it does or not, that doesn't matter. You've done what your obligation was in terms of establishing objection. I'm Rav Yehuda Marav. Ein machzikim b'nichzei boreach. Someone who ran away. Someone had to leave the land suddenly. At the end of the sugya, we'll get to why he had to run away, what caused him to run away. But he abandoned the land because he had to run away. He's not abandoning it because he wants to give up ownership, but he's running because there's some trouble that's happening and he needs to be out of here. And now somebody comes and sets up shop on his land. Ki amrito kameh de Shmuel. Review this says, after I said this in front of Shmuel, the Rashbam gives us the background to this, but it's obvious in the Shas, that Rav Yehuda was a Talmid by Rav. After Rav passes away, he moves over to become a Talmid by Shmuel. And many times you see him, Rav Yehuda, bringing Memrot both from Rav and Shmuel. But more importantly, he brings Memrot of Rav to Shmuel. And then Shmuel will argue or disagree with that Memrot of Rav, and that's what happens here. Here he said a Memrot in the name of Rav. And then he says, Kamrita kameh de Shmuel. When I said over this Memrot from Rav in front of Shmuel, Amar li, v'chidim chot b'fanav hu tzarich? Does he have to really object right in front of his face? Meaning, what's the problem over here? Why can't you establish a chazakah in the property of a boreach? What Shmuel is surmising from the position of Rav is that Rav thinks you can't establish a chazakah here because the person who ran away can't show up and object in person in front of the person who's establishing a chazakah here. That lack of micha'ar, ability to object, b'fanav, is what prevents him from establishing the chazakah. Shmuel asks the rhetorical question, v'chi limchot b'fanav hu tzarich. Since when do you have to have a micha face to face? Which implies that the guy who ran away can do his micha wherever he is, and that'd be sufficient. V'rav ma'ika mashmalan. So then what Rav is coming to teach us, micha shlo b'fanav lo b'yav micha, that a mecha'ah, which is not done face-to-face or in-person, is not sufficient grounds. We've heard just the opposite. Rav himself said that an objection far away is an objection. That's what we conclude on the previous amud. On the previous amud, Amar Rabbi Abba Mar Mamel, Amar Rav, Lolom Kasavar, the Tana Kamba believes, mecha'ah shelo b'fanav, havi mecha'ah. He said that explicitly, that the Tana Kamba's position was an objection that is not done face-to-face works. So now we know that's Rav's position. So that's very good. So that's what Gemara says. Rav taima detana didan kamefarish v'lei lo svirile. Exactly what you just suggested. That statement of Rav Mamel, the name of Rav, was explaining the position of the Tana Kama, who says that Rav subscribes to that position. Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, that you need a mecha b'fanav, But he wanted to tell you that if you want to understand the position of the Chachamim, this is the position of the Chachamim, that a Mechah Shelo B'Fanav works. My personal position is like Rabbi Yehuda, that you need a Mechah B'Fanav. In that case, the Machloket here between Rab and Shmuel would be equivalent to the Machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tana Kama. According to Rav, he subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda's position that you need a Mechah B'Fanav, whereas Shmuel will be subscribing to the Tana Kama's position that you don't need a Mechah B'Fanav. The Nafkamina will be here in a case of Boreach, where the person is unable to return and object in person. Given that, Rav says, no Mechah, no Chazaka. Shmuel says, you don't need to be there in person to do the Mechah. He can do it wherever he is. He can raise his objection, and that would be sufficient grounds to stop the Chazaka. Given that, if he didn't object, then you can't establish a Chazaka because he didn't do what was required of him in order to prevent the other individual from establishing the Chazaka. There's Bam over your notes that in Yushalmi, Shmuel says that Bereach Yesh Lo Chazaka, and Yushalmi brings a proof to that from the story of the Isha Shunamit, who Elisha tells to leave the land and go to Eretz Plishtim because there's going to be a famine in the land for a duration of time. And when she comes back later to reclaim her property after the famine is passed, she finds that other people sitting on her property. It says, V'itan la'amelech saris echad, le'mor, ha'shev et kol asher la, v'et kol tuvat asedem yom azvat aretz v'adata. That the king, after she makes her plea or claim, takes up her position and defends her against those parties that had squatted on her property, and he gives her back her property. She requires the intervention of the king in order to get rid of these parties on her property, because they were able to establish a chazaka, even though she had, quote-unquote, run away because of the famine. So you see from here that you can't establish a chazaka on the property of a boreach. V'ika d'amre, amre b'yud amarav, machzikim b'nichsei boreach. So now we have an alternate version of this where Rabbi Yehuda says in Imrav that you can establish a chazaka in the possessions or property of someone who's run away. So Bashbam over here says, came into Sheirot Mitzuyot, Anan Sade. We have an assumption, Shinodolo, that he got the information, Shechayrim Chigziku Bekarka Shelo, that other parties have taken possession of the property. V'lo Matzitain Lo Yadati. You can't say I didn't know about it. Ufikach Lo Machiti. And that's why I didn't object, because there's an underlying assumption that the information will travel. In addition, he says, "V'ayid denakat boreach." Someone ran away. Lav dafka. Tu adin l'chol marchike artzam. It's not about just somebody who ran away. It means anybody who's at a far distance or long distance from where we are. This din would be the same. Ki amrita kamei de Shmuel. After Rabbi Yehuda brought or presented this before Shmuel, amali pshita. He says, "What's the chiddush in Rav's position?" What Rav's coming to teach us, that you don't have to do a mechah b'fanav. Whoever thought you needed to do a mechah b'fanav? For Rav, Maika Mashmalon. So then what is Rav teaching us? Mechah shlo b'fanav ha'y mechah? That's what he's teaching us? That you don't have to do it in person? V'hamra Rav chada zimra. Didn't Rav already say this? That was Rav Mamel Amar Rav, that he already had told us that you don't need to do a mechah in person. Elhaka Mashmalon. This is what it's coming to teach us. Even if he declares his objection in front of two people who, for certain, who cannot transport the information to the individual who is establishing the chazaka, nevertheless, it is a mecha'a. Because, b'cha'a shalafanav, abi mecha'a. But the chiddush of Rav is that it's even to the extent where you've conveyed the information to people who, for certain, will not get that information back. For instance, the Rashbam over here brings an example of people who are chiger, person who's lame, he can't even walk. A person who is traveling somewhere else, they're heading in a different direction. Or they're too old, or they don't know the individual about who he is objecting. Or they're talking about sumim, they're people who are blind, who are not going to be able to transport the information or get there. Whatever the reasons are, these are individuals who they themselves will not be able to move the information. Because Rav Anan says that I was explained the position of Shmuel. Micha b'fnei shnei b'nei adam, shicholim lomar lo havi micha. That Shmuel says that only if you tell over this objection to parties that could transport the information to the person who's establishing the chazaka, then it is a micha. Micha'ah b'fnei shnei b'nei adam she'en yuchalim lamar lo. But if he gave that information, or he conveyed that information to parties that will not get it to the other party, lo havi micha'ah. So what Shmuel is saying is not that he has to necessarily give a directive to have them go, because then they become shlichim, and it's the equivalent of him going himself. But he has to, at least in potential, convey the information or convey the objection to parties who could transport the information back to the individual who is being machzik in his property. In potential is enough. You don't have to do the mecha bifanav, but you have to do the mecha in front of people that could get the information to that party. Rav, on the other hand, holds chavrach chavra idle. Your friend has a friend. The chavra chavra idle, and your friend also has a friend. News travels. The information will be transported. You don't need the individuals who physically can transport the information. You simply need people who will retell the information or convey the information forward. Neither according to Shmuel nor according to Rav do you have to direct these individuals to convey the information. Again, because then you might already make them into shlichim, and that would already fall into the category of seemingly saying that it has to be done bifanav. What we're saying here is that simply the conveyance of the information is sufficient. What are the requirements of conveying that information? Shmuel says you have to convey the information to parties that in potential could reach the machzik, even though they never do, but it just has to be that they have the potential to reach them. Rav says you don't even have to give it over to people with that potential, because the assumption is that the news will travel, and not that these people in particular are going to travel there. That would be the difference between them. Now, neither Rav nor Shmuel says this information. Shmuel only says that Rav's position is pshita. So that given that Shmuel says that Rav's position is pshita, it must be that Rav is coming to add something. What is he adding? He had a duplicate statement. Twice he said, Micha shelo b'fanav, havi micha'ah. So some read that as being the reason that we now add something into Rav's position, which is he must have had a chiddush in saying micha'ah shelo b'fanav is micha'ah, saying in two different contexts. The fact that he said it twice means in the second time he must be adding something, or the focus on shelo b'fanav, which is that micha shelo b'fanav, the shelo b'fanav, if he's emphasizing the shelo b'fanav, what's the emphasis on shelo b'fanav? It must be shelo b'fanav means even to parties that will never be b'fanav, that will never end up over there, that's still good enough in order for the information to be transported. Or you could be medayak out of the fact that we're talking about a boreach, someone who ran away. He doesn't want to disclose the information to parties who could travel back to the area where he is wanted. And therefore, he tells it over specifically to people who are not going to travel there, so that the information passes through hearsay rather than through a direct channel. And that will protect his location or his ability to remain hidden from the authorities. So Amar Rava, Rava says now, Hilchoto, the Psak Halacha is, so you are unable to take possession of the properties of a boreach. That follows the first version that we had in Rav. But on the other hand, the loch is that a mecha that is not done face to face is considered to be a mecha. So now, if you're going back to the first way that we had Rav, which is Rav says you cannot establish a chazaka on the property of a boreach. In that version, we said that Rav believed you needed to give the mecha'ah, the objection, face to face. He was subscribing to Rabbi Yehuda's position. And then when Rav had said, mecha shelo b'fanav, havi mecha'ah, that was only the Tana Kama's position, v'lei lo svirle. He doesn't hold of it. Tarte, the Gemara says, this is a stira minei oved. This is an internal contradiction. You're taking up two positions that do not reconcile. You're saying that mecha'ah shelo b'fanav is a good mecha'ah, which would imply that a boreach should have to object wherever he is. He doesn't have to come back, and therefore it should work, that his objection should work. Since his objection works, he should be able to establish a chazaka. So why is Rava Paskin, you can't establish a chazaka against the property of a boreach, yet you're not required to in person make that objection? Mar says, Lokasha, kan boreach machmat mamon, kan boreach machmat miradin. Question of why you are running away. Are you running away from monetary matters? Or are you running away because of matters of life and death? That makes a big difference. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it is that this person is wanted by the Malchut. Shaya mureid u'mukhuyav l'malchut. He was considered to be a traitor, a wanted person by the king or by the government. He's a fugitive. At that point, he does not want to disclose his position. Even if he was to object in a position or a place that's far away, that would give up his location. That would give out information that he doesn't want circulating. So in that case, he's not going to say a thing. If he's not going to say a thing, then there's no way he can object. If he can't object, you can't establish a chazakah, because your chazakah is not overriding or in the face of a lack of objection. The lack of objection is caused by these exogenous issues, which is this guy's life is at risk. The way that the Rashbam says it over here is that this person killed, and the word miradin, interestingly enough, has the same shorish as murder, and it might be that this person murdered someone, and now he's afraid of the gol adam. He's afraid of the blood revenge that the person who's chasing him down is trying to find him. And again, if he reveals his location, then he will be subject to the gol adam's finding him and killing him. So he won't disclose any information, he won't object, because that will give away his location. And the contrast to that, when a person runs away from monetary matters, so Rashbam points out, first of all, it's temporary. He just doesn't have the money now. When he raises the money, he'll come back and he'll pay back the individuals and it'll be fine. Or when someone is chayav monetarily to the other individuals, they don't have as much of an incentive to search him down and to kill him or to get him. There's a different type of incentive when there's money involved versus it's a revenge killing or it's the government searching for a party who's wronged them. I mean, that they have very different incentives in terms of finding the individual versus someone who has a monetary altercation with this individual. Therefore, he will object far away because he's not worried about disclosing his location. Nobody's going to chase him down in this far-flung place. He won't come back because he can't show his face in this area. So he can't object from where he is, and therefore that objection will be necessary, and the lack of that objection will allow you to establish a chazakah. So that's the difference between running away because of nefashot versus running away because of miradin. In the case of Mamon, where we would expect him to object and not think that the disclosure of his location is problematic, then we expect him to object. The lack of objection will allow for chazakah to be established. And that's what Rav is paskening, that when we say, Eimachzikim inichse boreach, that's in a case of nifashot issues, that you can't be machzik. But with regards to monetary matters, there you can't establish a chazakah because, Micha shelo b'fanav, havya micha, that an objection that is raised, not face-to-face, is sufficient objection, and therefore we expect you to make that objection. If you don't, then you forfeited your right if the person establishes a chazakah with the lack of that objection. Okay, we'll stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Lamed Chet Amud Bet.